What is up, everybody? Welcome back to Let's Be Real. I'm your host, Nicole Yunus, and it's been a break, y'all. It's been a minute. I had every intention of taking the summer off, coming right back to our season at the beginning of the fall. But you know what? Here in Richmond, Virginia, the summer just goes on. And it's taken a little, it's just taken a hot second to get used to the new life, you know? I mean, COVID life was not the best life, but it was a slower paced life. And kids getting out to school and all that, everything about that was so, so different. And so much has changed in my family in this past few months. We moved, we sent our oldest to college, and that was an adjustment. You just don't know what you don't know. Amen to that. Like, you don't know what it's going to be like. And he is doing great. And I think he's loving school, but it took a few weeks. I just found myself just constantly having in the back of my mind, like thinking about how my kids were doing. Just how are they, you know, how is Charlie doing in college? How is Cameron doing in high school? How is Desmond adjusting back to middle school? It just took like some emotional capacity. And that's been the drum I've been beating with people recently is like, hey, your emotional capacity is a real thing and you have to listen to it. And sometimes we might not be exhausted physically, but we can run out of emotional capacity just because of the demands of the people in our life and things that we need to attend to with the people that we love. So it just meant that we pushed back the beginning of Let's Be Real a few weeks, and we've just adjusted a couple of things for this season as we prepare for next season. So for the first time, I feel like in years, I'm trying to get ahead and kind of know where we're going. So we're super excited for what we're planning for in early 2022. But for the rest of this season, for this year, I've got some great, great guests coming on the show. These are real friends for me. These are people that I admire, that I respect their work. I look up to what they do, and I think they just have so much wisdom to bring to us. And really, my desire for you guys is that Let's Be Real is a safe place to be yourself, to be a work in progress, to be vulnerable, and to just have conversations with great folks about figuring out how to do life with freedom and purpose. So today is a wonderful kickoff because we are talking with Ashley Abercrombie. And Ashley is a new friend of mine, and she's written a book called Love is the Resistance, Learn to Disagree, Resolve the Conflicts You've Been Avoiding, and Create Real Change. And what I love about Ashley is obviously this is a very similar kind of category as The Miracle Moment, which P.S. there are so many books coming out right now about healthy relationships and resolving conflict. No surprise, because we all need to grow in that area. And I think that this last 18 months has revealed more of that for all of us. And so I love Ashley's approach though, because Ashley really is in a lot of ways to me a cultural commentator. She sort of has a journalism spirit to the way that she does her work mixed with her great sense of humor and vulnerability. And we had just an incredible conversation that went in a lot of different directions that we weren't planning on. We talked a lot about motherhood and loss of control and handling that in our own selves. We talked about conflict, obviously, and love, and what does it look like to really show up fully with all that you are, but to do so in a way that moves people toward love. So I know you guys are going to love this conversation. And of course, I want to give away a copy of Ashley's book. So if you head over to my Instagram at Nicole Yunus or my Facebook page, same name, it's easy to find me, U-N-I-C-E. There's just not that many of us, you guys. I think there's like 33 Yunuses in the U.S. last time I looked. So you're probably going to find me if you just spell my last name right. And we're going to give away a book. So just come on over there and drop your name and we're going to send a lucky winner Ashley's book. But regardless, get a copy. This is an awesome book to use to talk with friends, to be in a book club, or just for your own edification. Like, guys, take control of your life. If you know that this is something that you need help with, help is on the way. All right, y'all, enjoy this conversation with Ashley Abercrombie. Hey everyone, welcome to the Let's Be Real podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Yunus, and I believe we need all the help we can get when it comes to living a full and free life. Here you'll find honest truth, practical tips, and perspective changes that help you embrace the miracle that is your life. It's an in-process conversation that's going to be unfiltered, and it better be fun. Let's get real together. Hey, you guys, welcome back to Let's Be Real. I am so excited to be back, and I am back with a new friend, a good friend. Do you guys ever meet someone like in a random place, like an airport or like on a, at a carpool line, and you're like, girl, you're my sister. Like, I can just tell if we lived closer, we'd be really good friends. That's how I feel about Ashley, who's joining us on the show today. This is Ashley Abercrombie, and she is coming to us with a new book. I can't wait to introduce you guys and have this conversation about all things conflict, cancel culture, faith, and politics. What aren't we going to talk about, truly? Ashley, welcome to the show.
I'm so happy to be with you. And I feel exactly the same way. When we connected, I was like, oh, kindred spirit for sure. I love the work you do in the world.
And I love, you know, I always try to hold out that, really, when we write books, we really do want to connect friend to friend, like really, yes, truly, like a cup of coffee across from each other. And yeah, I felt like your first book, Rise of the Truth Teller, that was your first book, right?
Yeah, that was my first one.
I felt like your first book, it was as if I knew you. Like, it was like you were having a conversation. It was so good. It was so riveting and helpful and true. And so I've been so excited about your new book, Love is the Resistance, coming out. But before we get into that, Ashley, I want you to introduce yourself a little bit to our listeners. Tell us about your day today. If it's just a snapshot of your life, tell us about today and how it went. What time did you get up? What'd you do before we got here together today?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So this is a great day to ask this hilarious question. And thank you for this. So I have two little boys. They are almost 7 and 4. And then I have a newborn baby girl, and she's 8 months old, and she sleeps in this little thing called a Dock-a-Tot. And it's like this little thing that helps her like stay centered in our little bed. And this morning she woke out.
Oh, is it like
it
goes into your bed and it makes them have their own bed within a bed, so to speak?
Yes. Correct. But it's kind of flat. And she's huge. Like, just to give you, I don't know if you guys know about babies, if you're listening, if you don't, like when she was 4 months old, she weighed 17 pounds.
That's a big baby.
That's massive. So she can like move and roll, and she's doing all these things, but I didn't know she could like roll. And so this morning I woke up to her screaming because she rolled off the bed into the floor. So that's
that third baby at 6:30. And I like that you just said that. And anybody who wants to say anything to Ashley, don't say it. Don't say it. If you don't have three kids, don't say it, because that third kid, Desmond, I mean, my kid rolled off the couch so many times. Like, I don't know how many times you got to roll off the couch before your mom stops putting you on the couch. But it was the third one. It's just, you can't, it's zone defense. It's not one-to-one. Just are like all the time. There's like a problem. Someone's about to kill themselves at all times. So I totally understand. And she's okay. She's flexible.
She's wonderful. You know, as far as I know, God makes these children so resilient. And so that's the good news.
It's true. Des is 14 and he doesn't seem to have that many problems with the rolling off. I mean, it's still...
There are the days where you wonder, is there a brain injury? I'm sure.
He will, no pun intended, but that kid does roll with the punches, and he was rolling. He was rolling.
That's because you trained him as a newborn. You know,
Oh my goodness. So tell us a little bit, just maybe a word about what you've learned about yourself through mothering. Just a word, just a quick word.
Yeah. You know what? I think that I thought, I didn't know how angry I was. That's the first thing. Mm. And then I didn't understand the depths of grace that I would have to pull on. You know, there are just days, you know, motherhood for me has not ever felt like a break, you know, and it just never feels like I get a rest. So having to discover a rhythm of grace in the midst of that, like having to pull on God and his love in order to love my children in a new and fresh way has just been wow. And to learn self-control as a mother, because I was so angry and I just didn't know how angry I really was. I mean, I went to recovery for anger. So it's not like I was unaware of myself.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I didn't know that parenting would bring anger out of me. You know,
isn't it funny when you're like, no, Lord, I already learned that lesson. I'm done healing from that thing. And then you have a new season where he brings you to new depths of grace, new depths of character formation. Yeah. I can so relate. I was sharing with my teenage daughter. I'm like, that dent in the trash can is from me. I once punched ceiling of the car so hard that I like scraped my knuckles. Mm-hmm. I probably could have dented the car if I was on the outside. I was just like, I really struggled with self-control and with anger and selfishness and just this displacement of myself that I had no clue how self-centered I was.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I do. Yes,
yeah,
I do.
I bet you do.
It's very real. And I think every parent experiences that. You know, you don't, because there is no break and there is no margin. And there's this sense of a loss of control, and especially in terms of your time and your energy and your effort, like you lose control over it. You know, it no longer belongs to you. So you might have had some really great plans, but if a kid is having an off day or something happens in the house, like you have to turn your attention. And for me, I don't always know how to cope with that. It creates an immediate sense of helplessness. And that triggers anger in me, because if I feel like I can't fix it and I can't fix it quickly, then I just like go to a 10. So I've had to really learn how to deal with that sense of that loss of control on a consistent daily basis and having children. So it's been good for me, but it's not easy, man.
you sound like a very awake 8. Is that
correct?
Is that true?
Oh yeah. That is who I am.
I'm just like, wow, you just did a great job of describing your growth to ego death as in the Enneagram. But my gosh. We haven't even done like a full Enneagram series on here, because so many people do such a good job that I just want to tell everyone listening, like, go listen to someone else and come back, because I'm not going to do justice to what other folks do. We can drop a couple on the show notes that a lot of people like. But I mean, I can so relate. And I really think too, when you talk about loss of control and stuff, just for our single friends out there or those who aren't parenting, I think that also, there is still this loss of control that is part of the adult life of things, whatever that is, whether it's a relational failure or a work failure or something that we just feel like we can't fix or we can't make right. And I think we can all relate. It may be parenting, it may not, you know, it might be something else in your life, but it is an opportunity to grow. That's for sure.
It is so true. Yeah, I definitely experienced that in all the seasons of my life. I like to be in control. I like to be able to steer my own ship. And I think it's definitely challenging. And there, if it's not you personally going through something, then somebody in your family, or it's a doctor's diagnosis, or it's some event you have to show up to that you don't know how to fix, or you don't know what to say, or you don't know how you can make it better. And to just sit and be at peace with those things, I think is just difficult for us as humans. It's so uncomfortable to be still, and it's so uncomfortable to not be in a hurry, and it's so uncomfortable to be present and to so offer just that.
Yeah, you know? To not be able to fix it.
Yes.
For sure. I think that's, and I bet you, I mean, that might be a great segue. I'm assuming that might be something that you talk about even in your next book. Before we get into that though, I'd love to know, so you raise children, obviously you are doing some other things as well. You moonlight, let's say. You raise your children full time and you moonlight as a very successful author. Tell us a little bit about how you got into writing. Was that your like plan, or is this sort of plan B, C, D, G? What is
it? Because that's real. So I think that, you know, I started writing when I was a little girl and have always loved the writing process. And as an elementary student, I was in the 3rd or 4th grade. I wrote like a little book to help kids navigate divorce. And it won an award at the North Carolina like state kids award thing. And so I've always written, and it's always been my side hustle. So it took me about 20 years to, you know, kind of in faith go full time with writing. And that was just in 2018 or 2019 that I ended up doing that. And so it's been a wonderful ride. You know, COVID has definitely messed with that, but I still have enjoyed it. I wrote as a ghostwriter on 9 books before I became, before I wrote my own. And so that
didn't
was
you just tell
process.
This story on Instagram? Is that right?
I did. Yeah.
So you guys, if you're listening, go over to Ashley's Instagram. It's on the show notes, and you can read it also in her own words, which I really loved. So you ghost wrote before you even went full time. Is that right?
Yes,
before you went full time.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. And even those things were side hustles for me. So I think that we're all kind of, you know, I heard somebody say once, it's good to have a day job while you work your dream job. And so I think it's so important for us that while we're waiting to not lose heart, even though there are those days where you want to quit, where you want to give up. But I think for me with writing, it's just been this consistent outlet and a thing that I practiced when nobody was watching, when nobody was reading, and with the hope always that eventually I would be able to do it on a bigger scale. And whatever that leads to in the future is great. But I know for one thing's for certain, I can't not write. Like, it's just one of those things. I think each of us listening has that, you know, the thing that you just have to do, like you feel deeply compelled to do it.
Yeah. And it may not be, you may not end up writing or playing music or creating art or whatever for your full-time vocation. It doesn't mean that it's wasted or that God's not going to use it later. You know, I just was corresponding with a young writer. So I'm excited to share this with her because I just appreciate Ashley so much, like how hard you've worked. And most people will flip on your, you know, Instagram or buy your book and just, there is a sense of like, this all happened right away instead of like, no, this is actually more than 20 years in the making. This has been since you were in second grade in the making. And I want to just celebrate you and celebrate with you because we were talking off camera about it can always feel like you're not doing enough and that there's not enough out there. But truly, for whoever's listening, I just want to say, Ashley, you're doing a great job. And I just appreciate, and we can get into this in a little bit, like, I think that you have an incisive eye to culture, combining it with sort of a more, a longer term perspective of, you know, what really matters in the world. And I always wonder how people come to their knowledge, like come to the way that they see the world. Did you study journalism? I'm just curious.
Oh, that's interesting. No, but I wanted to.
So that's interesting.
A bunch of journalists. I ended up getting a scholarship for textiles because I was in North Carolina. I went to NC State. And so that's actually what I studied and not really having a desire or a passion, but it's just how I got a scholarship, which is the only way I could go to school. And so I took a couple of journalism classes because I really, really loved it. I like the hunt, you know, and I like sussing things out and I like looking at things from different angles and holding, I'm able to uniquely tolerate varying perspectives and different ideas. And to at least, even when I despise them or think they are very harmful, I still will push myself to understand why someone thinks the way they do. And because I think when you understand context about someone's life or about your own personal life, it changes the way you think and you're able to, you know, have that healthy differentiation with others where it's like, hey, I know what I think, what I need, what I feel, and I'm able to tolerate what other people think, what they need and what they feel and better understand why they arrive that way. So I don't have to take everything so personal. And we live in this world where everybody's exploding all the time. They are living at a 10 all the time. They are angry with others or frustrated with others or gossiping about others or judging others. You know, it's just like the world we live in. That is the air we breathe.
Yeah.
And I think because of that, you know, wanting to stay calm and pull back and think has kind of been my way.
Stay calm, pull back, think. I like it. It's a great mantra. Okay. So tell us a little bit about Love is the Resistance. Like what was the motivating factor? How did you get to this work?
So when I finished my last book, the last couple of chapters have a more, you know, justice oriented perspective. And I wrote about things that I'm deeply passionate about, whether it's the criminal justice system or the court system in America or, you know, race and gender. And I really loved writing those things. And the thing that kept coming to mind, because I love, you know, I know everybody listening is on different ideological maps and that's beautiful, but I loved like the hashtag resist, you know, I just really enjoyed watching young people get in the streets and like raise their voice. And I just like, oh, that's powerful. And at the same time, I was like, Ashley, are you in an echo chamber? Are you talking to people who, you know, they're never going to hear hashtag resist, but would be open to a reasonable conversation, would be open to change if they could hear it in a different way. And I just kept thinking, you know what? Love is the resistance. Like true love is really is resistance. And at first those things don't seem like they go together, but they really, really do. Like, how do you resist hurry? Well, you learn love. How do you resist fear? Well, you learn love. How do you resist demonizing others? You learn love. You know, how do you resist avoiding things that are bothering you? Conversations you don't want to have. Well, you learn love. And so I think for me, Love is a Resistance is the way the title came out. And I had no idea we were about to walk into a global pandemic. I had no idea. I knew we were 2020 was going to be a rough political season. I knew that.
Yeah.
But I just didn't fully understand all that was coming in the context that it was coming in.
Sure.
While we're all locked up at home and, you know, seeing so many tensions explode. I think that, you know, I was grateful to be able to write this book during that time, even though it felt hard. It felt like the crux of what I wanted to write was happening in the world.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You were like
so visible.
My theories are coming true.
Yes. Correct.
we really need love to be the resistance.
We really do.
Gosh, I know. I mean, it's so interesting how timely it'll be really interesting to look back on your book, like a decade from now and be able to see,
as you're writing in it and as we understand more of it. So some of this, and I love hearing that because I think a lot of us come to the table and maybe weren't aware of the level of rhetoric or the level of animosity that was already existing around us. Maybe we're just busy doing our lives or whatever. And then we all kind of got invited to the conversation, whether we wanted to or not. And so you talk about in chapter 2, cancel culture, and people throw this around. I'd love to hear like your definition of it and kind of like how it's affected the church, how it's affected Christians. What have you seen, and help us, give us your hot take.
So I love a phrase that my dear friend, Selena says. She says, cancel culture is like civil court to me. Okay. And I thought that was a really interesting perspective because I think sometimes we confuse cancel culture with accountability. And, you know, I actually am happy about what happened with Harvey Weinstein, for example. Just as one small example among many, I'm very, very happy that there was a public outcry and that women were saying, hey, these are the things that happened to me in this man's presence. This is what he allowed, because that enabled accountability to happen. And that's what my friend Selena means when she says cancel culture is like civil court, because, you know, his board didn't put him on notice. The people he's responsible to didn't put him on notice. The people that knew what was happening, that were complicit in the behaviors, didn't put him on notice. But we, the people, will put you on notice. And so there were op-eds that were written. There were famous actresses who decided to write in Vanity Fair and the New York Times and all these places to begin to expose what was really going on. So I think sometimes we confuse cancel culture with, you know, accountability. And then there's those times where I think cancel culture goes way too far. And I write about this in the book, but there's this, the young man, Nicholas Sandman, and many of you guys might remember him because there was a huge, in the CNN and the Washington Post, there were video clips that got released and they were not full video clips. And it was these young men who were at a pro-life rally in DC. And what the clip that we saw was a Native American elder coming across the front of this young man beating a drum. And it looked like the young man was maybe yelling slurs at the Native American elder, or that he was, you know, causing some kind of, you know, fight or something was going on. And that's how they wrote about it in the news. And then what was actually happening is the pro-life, the kids from the Catholic school at the pro-life rally were engaged in an argument with another group that was also like a very volatile, polarizing group. And the Native American elder was walking in between them beating a drum. Now, what ended up happening through this is that the young man and his family, mostly his family, because he's a, you know, he's a minor.
Yeah.
Sued both of those news outlets, and he was awarded $500 million.
What?
For those?
Because I kind of knew this story, but I didn't know the end of the story. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so CNN gave him $250 million and Washington Post gave him $250 million. So this is a case where people felt like this young man got canceled. His family decided to sue and he was awarded $500 million. And I just think to myself, this has gone too far. And then I think that, you know, sometimes we talk about cancel culture for people who want to avoid accountability. Or I think about the time where, you know, the Goya CEO sat with President Trump and made some kind remarks to him. And then there was a whole movement on Twitter to cancel, you know, Goya. And it's like, come on, guys, like, this is too far. He was sitting with the president. Most likely he's going to say some comments that are going to be kind, right?
Yeah.
So I think he would have done that no matter who the president is. Mm-hmm. And so I just think that we're all over the map when it comes to cancel culture. And it's not an old practice. You know, you look at Martin Luther King Jr. and how people are calling him a communist, a socialist. You look at Ruby Bridges, Dolores Huerta, Cesar Chavez. Like, we have so many examples throughout history and much further back of people wanting, you know, Jen Hatmaker, Lecrae. Like, we can keep going down this tangent and see that this is a practice Christians have been doing for a very long time. And my challenge to us and to the church is to say, you know what, we need to hold people accountable and we need to love them. So it's not canceling someone to hold them accountable. And it is not, you know, going too far to address or confront what might need to be addressed or confronted. And then we also need to slow our roll, because sometimes we just cancel people because we don't agree with them. It's like, this is actually not how it works, guys. Like, it's not how it works. So I think we have a long way to go here.
So what do you do with the narrative out there that is, but you have influence and you're leading people astray within the church? So that kind of, you know, you have influence, but you're leading you are leading people astray. Do you call that accountability? Do you call that the civil court of public opinion when people weigh in that way? Or what's your, and has that happened to you, Ashley? And how have you handled it?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really interesting to think about this and have this conversation, because I think that, again, we don't understand healthy differentiation. And so the church is notoriously bad at this, because that's why a lot of leaders in the church or people in the church will run around trying to be the moral police of the universe. And it's actually not our job. That's not our job. It is not our job to go around and tell everybody what they're doing wrong. And sometimes we do need to stand up for the right things. And we do need to understand when somebody is causing some hurtful, harmful behavior and address it and confront it. But at the same time, if somebody has a different ideological belief than you, there's no need to stand up and be like, this church will not let women be in the platform. They will not let them preach. Okay, well, great. So I'm not going to that church, and I'm not going to worry about that church, because I don't have time, energy, or effort to worry about that church. And then the difference between that versus, like, let's say, you know, a pastor who is causing abuse or harm, and he is hurting people and sexually abusing women, or he is, you know, abusing men who are on his staff, you know, verbally or however he might be doing it. Let's stand up and address that. Let's talk about that publicly. But just, we have to understand, again, healthy differentiation says that it's okay for us to have different ideological beliefs. And I don't need to attack you or cancel you or, you know, write 50 comments on your page because I don't agree with you. But there are those times, again, where people need to be held accountable. So I think there is a fine line. And 100% it's happened to me. Yes. I mean, people definitely come for me, call me a liberal social justice warrior. I don't even know what that is. You know what I mean? So, like, okay, I guess that's some rhetoric you learned somewhere in some media outlet that you want to try on me. And so I think, yeah, we're all dealing with that. And women deal with it on a regular. You know, we deal with it in our daily lives. When you decide to speak up on a staff and suddenly you're kicked out of meetings. And when you decide to raise your voice in your family and then suddenly you're not welcome back. You know, this is something that I think women deal with on a regular basis, which is why I don't think you see women running around doing podcast series or, you know, sermon series on cancel culture in the same way that you see men doing it, because we know what it feels like to be put down and to be left out and to be shut out because we have a voice of dissent, and not a bad one, a good one, a healthy one, a holy one. And so I think women know what this feels like on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. So let's take it there, since you're going there, into like the more personal side of things, like personal conflict and responding with love. What are some of the ways that you have seen that you've needed to grow that you encourage us in your book to grow?
Yeah. So when it comes to personal conflict, I think that two things happen is that we completely avoid it. You know, sweep issues under the rug, pretend like nothing bad is going on, or we explode. We're volatile. We get very angry. We are very confrontative. And the truth is, like, both, everyone is a good combo of both of these, given whichever relationship you're in. Like, for me, it's much easier for me to confront everywhere else but my intimate relationships. In my intimate relationships, I tend to be way more shy. I'm less likely to engage in conflict. I'm less likely to say what I really think because I love the people so deeply that it scares me to be in conflict. So we're all kind of a mixed bag when it comes to conflict. So I think finding a way forward is going, hey, there's these tensions in my life. There's these conversations that I'm avoiding. There are these ways that I respond to conflict that are actually avoiding intimacy and connection, because that's what it means when you sweep something under the rug. And that's what it means when you explode. You're actually avoiding intimacy and connection. But healthy conflict says, I'm going to be okay to be vulnerable here. I'm going to be okay to say what I think. I'm going to be okay to not get it right. And I'm going to be okay to engage with grace with this other person that I love dearly. And so some of the practices, you know, everything from no crosstalk is one of my favorites. Like, that just means you're not listening to respond. And you're not interrupting, but you are listening and understanding. And then there's mirroring, right? Where you can look at somebody and say, here's what I think I heard you say. Repeat it back to them. Is that right? And is there more? You know, having more of a question-based approach, even when I'm in conflict now with maybe my husband or a dear friend, one of my practices is to say, I don't think I'm going to get this right. I'm not very good at this in my most intimate relationships, and I don't know how to say this well. So will you please just give me a little grace as I fumble my way through this conversation, because it's important to me and I love you. So just asking for that on the front end, instead of feeling like if I don't get it right, if I don't say it right, and we build this thing up in our minds, and it leads to what? More conflict avoidance.
So yeah,
we have to just find a way to get the conversation going. Like, those are some practices I've had to learn.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I think that what you're really talking about is there's a humility there and there's a courage, and we live, you know, I think in that tension between humility says, I don't think I'm gonna get this right, you know, which is very disarming. and it very much creates connection. And then courage says, but I'm going to try anyway, which is also disarming, even if it's a little scary. It's a little scary for both parties because, of course, like someone almost like tenses up when they hear, I might not get this right, you know, yes. I might get hurt right now, but right. hopefully that foundation of the relationship can endure that. Now, I talk about a miracle moment that my experience is that we may have some very close relationships that do not want to go there. Yes. Have you experienced that? And if so, how have you kind of weathered through that?
Yeah, thank you for asking that question. And also, I loved your book. I mean, I loved it. Actually, you guys, I'm going to interrupt before I answer that. She sent these like beautiful little note cards that have these sort of mantras out with her book. And we still have them. Like we have them at our table. In fact, we had a couple over a few times and we used those cards. We had them like sitting on the table during our meal. So I just think what you're writing about in this book is so practical and helpful and we desperately need it. Yeah, so I think that it feels challenging sometimes to address how do I get through to this person when they don't want to go there with me? How do I yeah. have a conversation they don't want to have? How do I connect with the person who's not interested in being vulnerable and
yes.
leave their relationships where you're maybe not safe? And they can be as far away as work relationships where you're not really close to the person. It might be a boss or a coworker, and it can be at home. You know, mm-hmm. you might have a spouse, you might have a child, you might have a roommate that you're very, very close to, a family member that you're like, they won't engage this way. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, realizing again, back to the loss of control is that I'm not responsible for the way someone responds mm-hmm. to a confrontation. I'm not responsible for their part. I can only do my part. I can only share my part. And once I've shared, I have to be understanding and tolerant of the way they respond.
Yeah.
So if their response is anger, if their response is lack of vulnerability, if their response is to, you know, blame, if their response is to further avoid, then that means that I can't actually control that. That yeah. is their work and their part. So figuring out a way to move forward together, live together, and have safe and healthy boundaries, like whether it's at your job, maybe your boss speaks to you terribly and you need to have a confrontation. You need to sit down with them and say, actually, it's not okay or professional for you to speak mm-hmm. to me this way. And I'm no longer going to tolerate it. Mm-hmm. And then you have to just see how they respond, right? And then if it doesn't work, you get to start documenting for HR. It's like, you know, you have to, you know, there are different ways to respond in all these situations, but I think it goes back to that loss of control. You do your part
yeah.
and you allow the other person to do their work. And if they won't do it, there's nothing you can do about it. So you have to figure out what is my healthy boundary here? What keeps my heart and mind safe here? And how do I stay honest and not get enmeshed with this person in a way that I'm perpetuating a dysfunctional piece to our relationship? So
yeah.
you have to figure that out.
So beautifully said. I think for me, it's like you have to recognize too that the energy that you've allocated towards a reactive relationship or a frustrating one or an anger one is now going to have to be reallocated possibly to dealing with the fact that you don't have control, possibly to grief about what you wish was and isn't. So there's, yeah. there is like another side to it that I do think is the way to freedom, but it is a little bit of the way down, I think yeah. first, because one of the things I've noticed is how often we use reactive, somewhat dysfunctional relationships as a way to not, to make sure that our energy is going outward and it's not Woo. Going toward anything inward. And right. I just want to like raise a flag to say, hey guys, that's what's going to happen next. Yeah. So don't expect to start having boundaries, release another person, and all of a sudden just feel really free. You might feel really sad, but there's like growth in that and you're becoming a stronger and deeper and better person. But you just might need a little help. And that's what we're here for, girl. That's what we're here
Correct.
To do.
Correct. Yes.
We both dealt with it. So yes. we want to just say we stand with you. And I yes. personally have found so much freedom in only minding my own business.
Yes.
So,
Amen.
But it's not, you know, it's not easy. It's an ongoing work. So for sure, for sure. So, okay, let's say you mentioned at the beginning, and as we're kind of getting close to the wrap up, I have one more question to ask you too. But you mentioned at the beginning, like, having the ability that you've learned to have the ability to really care about where someone's coming from, even when you like really despise or disagree.
Yes.
With any practical tips for any of us, everyone just put into your mind right now, a certain people group that is really yes. bothering you. Cause I'm sure you can find one right now, no matter where you are on the ideological spectrum.
Yes.
Think about that group, put them in your head, and now listen to Ashley's words. What is a way to get beyond really, you use the word despise. So I'm going to use it too. That sort of sense of, I just want to push this away and it's about them and, you know, they're alien to me. What's your way forward?
Okay. So I'm going to go a little old school Bible here. So I think that, you know, we have lost the spiritual discipline of enemy love. And God not only commands us to love, but he commands us to love even our enemy. Mm-hmm. And so I think that part of maturing as a human and part of maturing as a person of faith is to recognize God has not just commanded me to love people that I like. And God has not just commanded me to not gossip or judge or speak poorly about or to have, you know, demonizing or villainizing views about people that I love. He has commanded that for every person that I come into contact with. Now, this is hard freaking work because there have been times where I've typed some stuff on the internet that I deeply regret. Like I remember writing once too, there was this prophet who stood up, a prophet. So, you know, I put it in quotation marks to be frank, but stood up and said, you know, if you vote this way, you're supporting Satan. And if you vote this way, you're going to hell. You know, like, and I was just like, first of all, that's not even democracy. Number one, you know, like this is bad on all fronts. And I remember just, you know, get my little trigger happy hands. And I was just like, this is hot trash.
You guys all imagine the cat on the keyboard right now.
Exactly. Use that gift. That was me. And I'm like, this is hot trash, you know, just angry. And I regret writing that because, you know, I'm not practicing what I preach because even that person that I deeply despised what they shared. And I deeply despised the way that they were leading their people. And I deeply despised the way that they were using their leadership to tell people what's right and what's wrong in a way that is unbiblical. Mm-hmm. And I just got a little trigger happy. And I thought to myself, you know what? God loves even that person. And I need to allow space for honor and respect. And to your point, minding my own business. Like, why was I even on that page anyway? Like, who cares? Like, he's out there doing his thing in the world. He is unconcerned about me. He's unbothered while I'm angry about something that he's putting, right? I don't even know this person. So like, I had to really pull it back. And obviously that's one of those outward distant examples, but it can happen sitting at the dinner table on the holidays when politics comes up, or maybe a young person in your life introduces himself or herself with pronouns and you're like, what is happening right now? Are you kidding? And it throws you through the roof. Right. Or somebody makes a comment about, you know, immigrants in America and it sends you through the roof. What do you do? Like, what do you do in those moments? And those are the moments where I have to lean into the fact that God asks me, commands me to practice enemy love. And so even this ideological perspective that I despise or hate or think is unbiblical, how can I engage with this person in a way that is kind? And I'm not talking about not speaking up, because you better believe at the dinner table, I will certainly say, hey, we don't talk like that about people, period. And we especially don't talk like that about people that I know who are my friends, you know, like I will make sure to raise my voice, but I do it in a way that's not, you know, combative. It's not, it's just a confrontation and it's a healthy truth. And I think we all need that healthy dose of do better. And we need folks who are more willing to do that at the dinner table, more willing to do that online, engage in a way that people can see respect. They can see honor. They can see that like, oh, this person is a disciple. Look at the way that they love. And I think we need more of that in our world. And we need more leaders who are willing to lead like that, even if it costs them something. You know, we need more people who are just willing to say, you know, the Lord commands me to love. And that's the bottom line. You just got to return to the baseline of the Bible, you know, like sometimes.
Gosh, so true. And we all know, I mean, maybe this time more than ever has led us to that place, just like Jesus' disciples said when they were like, This is a hard teaching. Who can receive this? You know, and Jesus was like, with God, all things are possible. Like it's not going to be possible on your own. You're exactly right. And this is an opportunity for grace. And one thing I love about you, Ashley, and this is in your first book and in your second, is you are very well acquainted with God's grace. And that is what gives us the fuel to say, we can be different. It's not, you're not going to be different because you pull yourself up by your bootstraps and just like start being a nicer person. Like, it's just not about that. It is about like this transformation that God can do in your heart. So, so grateful for that. You guys, the book is Love is the Resistance. You can pick it up everywhere. It just came out. This is like an early interview, but it's going to come out right after the book releases. I'm super excited about it. And just as we close, I'm going to take us up just a notch up here, because this is the question I always ask all my guests.
So ready.
And we just have to ask it. And it's, what app, product, or person is just changing your life right now as we, you know, leave our conversation?
Oh my gosh. I love this. And I love you so much. Thank you for having me.
I love having you. And I'm super glad for all of our people to connect to each other.
Oh, same. So I think what's saving my life, what I love the most right now is Audible. And so I was unable to, I'm a avid reader, like used to love to read. And during quarantine, I've just have been unable to do it over the last year and a half. And so I started listening to books on audiobook and on Audible so that I could listen. And now I can listen to novels or I can listen to books that I really want to hear. And it's been awesome. So I can do it while I'm washing dishes, while I'm driving my car, while I'm playing Legos with the kids. And that has just kept me like, a little bit away for me to refresh myself. So that's what I'm loving right now.
I'm so glad you said where you listen to it, because I have some friends who are huge Audible fans. Yes. And I'm always like, where are you girls at? I got no time where someone's not talking in my ear. I cannot.
Same.
Find a way. Except for when I take a long road trip. But other than that, I'm like, someone's always in talking to me. I don't know how you guys do Audible, but obviously
out.
Like chores. And I mean, it is, I love like when I get into that mode where you're doing laundry or chores and you can like be just elsewhere in your mind is so cool.
Yes,
any book wonderful. That stands out for you this quarantine that you've really like enjoyed or has been super thought provoking?
Oh, totally. So there's a great novel called The Guest List.
Okay.
Oh, it is not only the best audiobook I've ever heard in my life with the different voices. There's like six characters. It is so life-giving. And at the end of it, there's just like this freaking redemption you don't see coming. And I'm like, this girl is the
guest
wisest,
list?
Wildest girl. Yes. By Lucy Foley.
Okay. Awesome.
Recommend.
Oh my gosh. I haven't read it. I usually, I like most of the time I love to read too. So a lot of times I've read what people share, but yes,
you're
a new
love
book
it.
Here for the end of summer read. Okay. Awesome. Thank you, Ashley. You guys, you have all the ways to connect with Ashley are below, and Love is the Resistance is the book. Go walk. Not walk. Run, don't walk. Run, don't walk. That's what I was trying to say. Run, don't walk to your Amazon account, people, because no one goes to bookstores anymore. But
true,
if you do see a book, I mean, whenever I see my book in an actual bookstore, I'm like, I'm going to sign that thing.
Same. Because there's probably only 30 in America.
I know, truly. May God grant you the gift of being able to sign your book in a bookstore, Ashley,
Amen.
This fall. Okay, thanks for coming.
Thanks
Talk to you guys
me.
Later. Bye-bye. Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Let's Be Real podcast. If you have a question for the show, you can send it to me at Nicole@NicoleEunice.com. And hey, if you're enjoying this, we'd love for you to like, subscribe, share it with your friends, pass it on, shout it from the rooftops, whatever you feel like doing, because the reality is, let's get as many people getting real as possible. Talk to you soon.